Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Opera Now, your opera podcast. I'm your host, as Michael Rice. Today is Thursday, June 14th, 2007. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We've got a small group today, but a feisty one, and we may be having a special guest panelist coming in at the end. We'll see what happens if they show up. They may or may not, so don't anybody lose any sleep over it until then. I'd like to welcome the people I do have with me right now, Brian McGilvray.
Hey, good evening.
And Roberta Rice.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you here again. Let's jump right into things. First story I want to talk about is something that you can find on our website, operanow.blogspot.com. It's about that dude, Paul Potts, from Britain's Got Talent. That's the British version of the show we have here. It started in Britain. But America's Got Talent we have here with the Hoff and those two other people. So this guy, Paul Potts, he is a car phone salesman, maybe a used car phone salesman, probably just a regular car phone salesman, goes up and to the microphone, signs up for the show and says, I'm going to sing. They say, what are you going to sing? He says, I'm going to sing a bit of opera for you. And he starts singing Nessun Dorma. And, you know, this guy is not a singer by trade. He's a complete amateur. Always had a dream to be an opera singer, and he did a great job, all things considered. Have you guys listened to the clip yet, or seen it?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It's all over the news.
Yeah. I thought he did a very good job.
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't want to fault his performance. I mean, I don't know what kind of training he's had, but he clearly has talent. And what I was wondering when I watched it was, is this the first person to have tried this sort of a... I don't want to call it a stunt, but I mean, I could have sworn I heard about, at least on American Idol or something, you know, singers showing up and singing opera arias. Is it just because this guy is not a singer? Is that what we're impressed by?
Or? The idea of this show is different. It's just about somebody who is having talent. It's not like somebody's going to become the next pop star.
You know? Okay, so why did they act so surprised?
Because he was so good, and he's a car salesman.
No, no, no. When he said he was going to sing opera, everybody was like, what?
I mean, he looks a little little dull, I guess, maybe. They didn't expect that out of him. He's a short guy, it seems.
Because opera's so glamorous a profession?
Well, I don't know. People think of it as still. When you tell somebody you're an opera singer, they go, oh, wow. So exciting, glamorous.
Such a novelty, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, the impression I got from the video was that it was not – he was sort of breaking some kind of rule. But that he won them over because,
you know,
he was so good.
Brian, I think maybe, and I could be wrong because I've never seen the British version, but I've seen a few of the American versions of this show. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just overall unusual for someone to get up and sing in this style of music. You have plenty of people getting up to sing and show that they have talent as singers, but no one, I don't think to this point, has really attempted this type of music before. So I think that's what kind of like set them back a little bit. That someone would get up and try and sing opera of all things.
Plus, I mean, he did a very good job.
Yeah, exactly.
Once again, considering what he, you know, his background and, you know, his...
Yeah, so that was probably, you know, another big surprise. Was not only was he getting up to sing that music, but he actually did a decent job.
Mm-hmm. No, that part I got. I just wasn't sure about the background.
Oh, yeah. That's
I have another question.
What is it?
Who's the broad?
Yeah, she really enjoyed the performance towards the end.
She looked like she was really, really there with him.
Having some spasms, so to speak.
She was cresting with him on the high note.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't know who the heck that was supposed to be. I guess
she's some British actress.
She's Britain's version of Paula Abdul, I guess.
Well, let's hope so.
Getting drunk on Pimm's, though, instead of vodka.
But again, I think also, I mean, since we don't know what it was like to experience live, but if he has a very big voice... For people to hear such a large voice in person, I think is always very, and especially when a large voice sings high notes, I think it can be really, you know, surprising and exciting to a person. That's always, I mean, not that I have the largest voice on the earth, but when people hear me sing, they say, oh my gosh, you know, how do you get that much sound out of your body? It's just not normal, you know, it's... Yeah. For lack of a better description, it's not normal for a person to be able to make that much sound.
That could be. I mean, I think he looks like he was probably, if I remember from watching it, he was mic'd or, you know, they get up and...
Absolutely. No, he was.
And that could be even a greater deal. What if a you know, person with an operatic voice for mic, that's even more... powerful.
Well, he didn't sound too over. Oh, it could have been that. I think they were just surprised. Again, not. I'm not trying to be, but the guy walks. He kind of shuffled up there, and he says he doesn't. He's never had much confidence. That's been a big problem for him.
Aww.
So this was good for him, I think. But he, you know, if you look at him, he's kind of cross-eyed and.
Yeah, it's just one big human interest story.
Exactly.
You know. Yeah.
That could be it.
Everything
it
kind of rolled up together.
They were just wowed by just the act of it in general, too. So.
But I hope he does well. You know.
Yeah.
Good luck to him.
Maybe something will happen for him. He can replace what's his face, the blind dude.
Right.
Blind and deaf guy. Is he deaf too, or just blind?
Andrea Bocelli. He's just blind.
Okay.
He's not mute, but he could be the other two.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's do a little follow-up to one of our earliest stories. You were both there. Management agency ICM Artists changes name and location. As we all know, right. ICM Artists had sold off the classical department many, many months ago, last fall. And they are now going to be working as a new company with the name Opus 3 Artists. Moving into new offices next month at Park Avenue South and 32nd Street. Moving downtown.
Right.
And they have their new website, Opus 3 Artists. It looks like most of the, it pretty much has stayed intact. They've still got all their big names, Conlon and Yo-Yo Ma, Baron Boehm, and then people like Patricia Rosette, Blythe, Bostridge, Nathan Guns.
Nathan's Guns.
They're doing it. And as I thought maybe they were going to be above a Walgreens, but they're not apparently. at Prime Real Estate, so I stand corrected.
That's terrific news.
David Foster will be the president and CEO of the division. Mm-hmm.
So this is just like a break with the past kind of a move?
No, it was like a we're kicking your asses to the curb kind of move. Yeah. So they, I mean, ICM was trying to sell it off. So
right, trying to get rid of them.
But I mean, the name change.
Yes, well, they have to. I mean, I'm sure that's the main
reason. They had to. Okay.
Yeah. You can't.
I wonder how they came up with that Opus 3. Are there three divisions, maybe, within?
Maybe.
Like conducting, you know, singing and instrumental or something?
Who knows?
I have to say it reminds me of the Opus Dei.
It's a bit uncomfortable.
The secretive Catholic organization. Yeah. So maybe Opus Trey, Opus Dei, I don't know.
It's headed by David Foster, apparently, is a very large albino. No, I'm just kidding, David Foster. That was, of course, our Da Vinci Code reference.
Right.
But they're back in business, baby. Nothing's going to keep them down. And they've kept all their big names, Jonathan Brill, Woodfield, Benson, Neil Benson, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. I thought you meant Benson, the television.
Robert Guillaume? Yeah.
He'll greet you at the desk.
Wow.
He's working the reception.
Plus, apparently, they also have the office manager is René Aubergenois.
Nice. Great news.
Everything's coming up roses for Opus Dei Artists, or whatever they're called.
Trey.
Opus Trey. Even worse.
Three.
Yes.
Okay. Good for them.
Yeah.
Whatever.
They landed on their feet. Okay, let's move on to the Huffington Post, that, of course, you know, blog/website run by that nut, Arianna Huffington. Mm-hmm. Possible.
She is wacky.
She is. Jumping all from one side way to the other. But this is an article by a guy named Ivan Katz, who is a writer and a person who submits articles to the site. From Opera to Opera, the movie. Now, we had this discussion last week talking about, and Kevin Keyes, our guest last week, was talking about how he thought it was this whole idea of, to some degree, these high-definition broadcasts and DVDs and videos might be dangerous because the more they try to put opera into the mainstream media, as far as television and videos and DVDs, high definition, the more he's worried that the result on the stage is going to suffer because they're going to get people who are more telegenic rather than vocalgenic. And it's amazing. This guy's article, now whether you agree or disagree with him and his fears, the next day I read this article, this guy talking about it. That right down to the correlation. We've got the link up on our website, Opera Now Topic, so you can go check it out. He's talking about how comparing it to baseball, opera and baseball have never been mutually exclusive, of course, with Robert Merrill singing at hundreds of Yankee games. Modern-day baseball involves the provision of two distinct audiences, the fans who buy the tickets to the park and the fans who watch it on TV or hear it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Each brand of commerce provides a revenue stream for the team. And he's that's just one, I mentioned that only because it was the exact type of thing that Kevin was talking about as well. It was very interesting. But to sum it all up, in short, beaming a radio broadcast from the stage of the Opera House to the city and the world requires no change in the production, but a video transmission does. And to diminish the impact of the opera in the house in order to maximize the impact on screen is a classic case of Peter robbing Peter to pay Paul. Although this is doubtless a great way to ensure the support of Paul, it's a very risky way to run an opera company. What's your take on this, Brian? You weren't around last week. I'm sure you've listened to the show.
Well, I mean, I think Kevin's absolutely right. And opera was never, you know, conceived with television or film in mind from the beginning. So it is going to have to be changed in order to accommodate a TV audience. And all the things, all the concerns that he cites are valid. And I have to assume that opera companies are aware of those concerns and would try to mitigate any negative effects on their live audience. I mean, and maybe like, I don't know if it was in this article, but he said maybe, or maybe a commenter suggested that they could have a television taping type performance that was separate from the live performance, which seemed like a reasonable idea to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's anytime you take an art form out of its natural element, you're going to be making changes, both intentional and unintentional, to the impact of the art, and it's just going to have a different effect. Mm-hmm. And certainly from the point of view of paying more attention to things like whether someone is telegenic or even the way
production is staged. As well.
Oh yeah, the way it's staged and the way you switch from camera to camera, you know, all those things aren't necessarily compatible with what makes a great opera singer in the house. So, you know, it's certainly cause for concern. I don't have anything against opera houses doing this sort of thing, but you know, they're going to have to figure out how to balance it.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. I mean, it's just. The article mentions the spontaneity, you know, will quite potentially be lost. And more, it seems to me like we're looking now more and more for singers who can move comfortably on stage and react well and act and, you know, be more theatrical. But isn't this sort of going to prevent them from being able to do that in a way? I think it will, because yeah. I think if you're a good actor on stage and you're spontaneous and you bring excitement to your interpretations by your movement, because let's face it, you need to move when you're on an operatic stage, because more often than not, you have a large space surrounding you and you have people from afar watching. So you do need a bit more of a grand gesture.
Yeah.
At least that's how it always has been. And I think you're going to lose that entirely, and it's And I did see the Puritani that was televised or whatever. And what I had to, I just thought it was lovely, but it was so boring. And I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that they knew it was being filmed for television. And I even recall in an interview with one of the singer saying, you know, she was so preoccupied the whole time with what her mouth looked like. And what mm-hmm. it would look like, you know, on the camera, that's all she was thinking about. And I mean, it just, you know, to me, it seemed unnatural to the art form, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, it's nothing particularly new. I mean, they've been filming opera for decades. You know, you can go back and watch performances from the. I mean, so it's something that singers have had to be aware of and deal with. For a long time. I think it's a question of how far they take it and how much like television
or
a movie
camera
that
one,
we're used to seeing.
Yeah, and I think they're trying to orchestrate it like that, you know, and present.
They're going to have to back off from that
way.
Sort of, from the ultimate.
Because I think that they'll probably feel like, well, if you film it the old way, you know, like these old Arena di Verona, you know, films of Turandot and Madame Butterfly and stuff that were done years ago, and you film it just like with several cameras and you just sort of like pluck it all together and you don't film it like it's supposed to be on television, mm-hmm. then people are still not going to feel any differently than if they were sitting there in the house. Whereas now it seems like with the success of these, you know, broadcast feeds and everything of the opera, into movie theaters and on, you know, your HD televisions, now they're feeling more pressure to film it more like, you know, its main medium is television or the screen. And so that's the problem.
They all turn into it like the Last Waltz, the documentary of the band by Martin Scorsese. Okay, right. Well, I just wanted to bring that up because it just, again, whether you agree with it or not, it was amazing because it was exactly the same kind of points that Kevin was bringing up.
And now he no doubt listens to opera now.
I hope so. We now go on to something, one of your pet peeves, Brian. Once again, by Ivan Katz. Ivan Katz, I hope he's not a communist. The Broadway musical is not opera. The May 25th issue of the Sydney Morning.
I love this guy's picture, by the way, can I say? He looks like a good guy. Like
in Australia, they beat their box office expectations by 4%, finishing the year with a surplus. The cloud surrounding it, though, is that the big smash was the Pirates of Penzance, the old GNS warhorse. Although the demarcation line, and because of that, they're going to do My Fair Lady now as part of their season next year. The demarcation line between opera and stage musical performances has never been a bright one. It does exist. For a company that's looking for money, it's better to do something like that that's going to get people in the seats than, you know, file for Chapter 11. According to Ivan Katz. However, but there's a small matter of artistic integrity that needs to be taken into account as well. There is a reason why the average opera subscription does not include Parsifal, Camelot, Cosi, Silk Stockings, Trovatore, Tannhäuser, and My Fair Lady. They go together like salami and whipped cream.
That was really funny.
When the rush to
fill fortunately, you don't have to watch them on the same evening.
Here's the best: when the rush to fill opera house seats depends on this level of commercial sensibility and artistic bankruptcy. Kind of a powerful statement. The day is not far off when an advertisement will appear proclaiming Rod Stewart is Johnny Skeeky.
Oh, we need Kevin on this episode.
Well, I invited him, but he declined.
Oh, he missed.
Yeah.
I think he needs a breather, honestly, because he was very charged last time.
He did.
I imagine that's draining.
So, and this is a point that I've brought up, too. We've discussed places like City Opera doing Gilbert and Sullivan, and they were going to do...
But, I mean, would you consider Gilbert and Sullivan the same as a musical?
I don't know.
No.
I think it depends on what the musical is, ultimately.
True.
What style it's in.
But I'm asking about Gilbert and Sullivan.
No, I don't think so.
So Gilbert and Sullivan is operetta.
I think they should do Gilbert and Sullivan. I don't know why they do things like Fledermaus. They should do Gilbert and Sullivan. That's 1,000 times better.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, but I mean, I think Gilbert and Sullivan's fine. My Fair Lady is a great show, but again, I see his point. He probably feels like opera houses are selling out if they're, you know, willing to present shows like My Fair Lady. You know, Showboat. I mean, they're great shows. I think they're fantastic, but should they be presented side by side with Trovatore, you know, Parsifal, so on and so forth? He seems to think it's really a bad idea.
I mean, I know you introduced this as my pet peeve, but I kind of think he's out on a limb. I mean, I think he's being a little dramatic.
Well, do you read the last sentence? This will likely set off mass cardiac arrest in the opera community. I do think that's overreacting a little bit.
I think, is he referring to Johnny Skeeky here? Or
I think he's referring to
Rod Stewart. Or
no, just the whole idea of his article of presenting mm-hmm. Showboat next to, you know, Cozy. He thinks.
Well, but they did. I mean, they didn't do that. They did Pirates and I don't know My Fair Lady. I mean,
but now they want to do My Fair Ladies for next season.
Well, I mean, that's different from jumbling it all together. If they do one per season, you know, that's not the same thing as what he's saying.
But I think he's looking down the road.
Well, yeah, he's seeing an avalanche.
Yes.
Which I'm not convinced would happen or how bad it would be if it did happen. I mean, I'm more concerned. My pet peeve is when the style of music theater bleeds into opera.
Okay.
Not when an opera house puts on a musical theater show, provided they do it, you know, idiomatically.
In a tasteful manner.
Well, you know, I do have to say that I think that if they did present My Fair Lady and it brought people into the house, obviously it brings them closer to their marketing materials, and it could quite possibly, you know, not convert them, I don't want to say that, but it could quite possibly give them interest in seeing one of the operas.
See, I don't understand that argument. I mean, I don't know how valid that, and I'm not saying you specifically, but just in general, people say that, you know, they've said that about, you know, in the world of musical theater, shows like the Grease show, they think people, when they were trying to pick the people to play Danny and Sandy, you know, they think, oh, it's, things like this are going to be a great way to get kids and get new people into theater because they're going to see that and then maybe they're going to want to see something else. I don't think they're going to want to see something else. I think they're going to want to see what they wanted to see. And they're going to want to see something similar. I don't
I was just trying to say something positive.
I'm not saying... that's not what I mean. I'm not trying to attack you at all. I'm just saying...
No, I understand your point. You feel like people like what they like, and that's that.
I don't know how valid an argument... I'm curious to find out how much... if there's any numbers they have, like on cross-marketing when they do one type of show.
Well, they probably don't have enough experience doing it.
Like, how did you find... I'm sure they have subscription... like questionnaires or whatever. How did you come to the? Why did you come? What did you see? Would you see something else? But I it's hard to find those numbers. They probably guard them very closely.
True, but
well,
like,
this is all part of it. Sorry, go ahead.
All I was going to say is that I think this is I think they probably expect that the musical theater loving audience is going to come see My Fair Lady, and therefore the theater will make more money and they'll be able to go on, and they're not maybe expecting at this early stage, you know, people to come in, see, you know, advertisements for other shows and think, oh, great, I get to see Parsifal. Wow. But, you know, I think that right now it's just to make extra money for the theater.
Well, who knows?
It's all part of that meta concern about we've got to get people more interested in opera any way we can, you know.
Yeah.
All this and, you know, my feeling of that is the way to do that properly is to make the opera better, not to
keep some type of new and exciting way to spread the word about opera, such as a podcast like Opera Now.
That's all well and good, of course.
I'm convinced that, you know, you need something like a really exciting singer or singers.
Or podcast.
Yeah, I mean,
how do you think how do you think we dragged Millip in?
Well, I want to hear what Brian has to say.
Well, I mean, if opera in and of itself isn't good enough to keep people interested in it, then that's got to be the fault of opera and not the fault that you didn't do enough, you know.
Marketing ahead of time.
Yeah, music, theater, blending and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at the history of opera and I certainly, from my own personal perspective, see a correlation between the quality, the overall quality of singing, which was higher, you know, 50 and 100 years ago, in my humble opinion, and the overall popularity of opera as an art form. And I see a correlation that I can't prove causation, but...
And you can't deny it either. You know, it's definitely exists.
I think the recordings part of it
was also
speak for themselves.
Everything got skewed because other forms of entertainment came along. Television.
True.
Wireless. Things like that.
But there was a lot of overlap there. I mean, if you look at the 50s and 60s, there were other forms of entertainment, but opera was still
when rock and roll was born.
Much more of a mainstream. And I'm sure a lot of that had to do with the older generations still being around. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I guess we can't complain because ticket sales appear to be good here and there.
Yeah.
Well, then why is everyone so scared?
Well, maybe because they're obsessed with the need for it to be more of a growth industry, you know, like if they're like the status quo is never good enough.
Or keeping up maybe with, you know, Broadway musical type revenues.
I guess. I mean,
well, I don't think they're going to ever approach that. I think maybe they're just, it's, you know, a lot of it is due to the fact that grants and things like that have started to dry up over the last.
Or maybe there are just too many opera houses to be sustained.
That could be. That'd be pretty interesting if that was the case.
Yeah.
I mean, there have to be a lot more now than there ever were.
Yeah. Oh, there certainly are.
So
there's at least
a gajillion.
A million opera houses in this country alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not exaggerating.
I think I read that.
There's no hyperbole there. But it'll work itself out, as I like to say.
It all comes out in the wash.
It does. Okay, another follow-up. This is
let Arby's worry about it.
This is our follow-up episode. Vienna State Opera appoints Dominique Meyer its next director, with Franz Welser-Möst as music director.
Nice.
We, of course, remember we were talking about this. There was a big brouhaha in Vienna. Some people were claiming that the minister wanted to put his old buddy Neil Schikoff in the position, but they've changed their mind. Dominique Meyer, who is head of the theater at the Champs Élysées in Paris, will be the next intendant. Fantastic.
Great. Good for him.
Yeah. This is going to be an exciting time for Vienna. I don't know. I don't have an opinion either way.
Me either.
I just wanted to follow up with this story since we discussed it before.
We invite our listeners to investigate on their own.
Please do.
Form their own opinions.
Of course.
I invite you to.
It's Vienna. It's halfway around the world. What do we know?
We got a war on terror to fight. We can't be worrying about that.
Aren't they all Nazis anyway?
Not anymore. Or Kurt Waldheim died. I should have said
that's
that.
Right.
Guess who died? We'll save that for later. The famous Nazi and UN.
Not sure what the
UN
opera connection is.
Well, Vienna is the city of Mozart.
Indeed.
Okay.
It's become. That's what the chocolates say.
Vienna, Mozart.
The Vienna chocolate.
Kurt Waldheim, Nazis. Kurt Waldheim's dead. There's your chain.
And the Sound of Music.
And in the middle of that is Kevin Bacon. Mixed into the mix. Here's an interesting story. Opera with a techno beat.
Singer, this looks very strange.
Singer, songwriter, composer Tyrone and his operatic legend Mum Maggie are causing quite a stir around town with their eclectic musical creation of classical works to booming modern beats. This dude's doing some...
First of all, should I know who either Tyrone or Maggie
Yeah,
are?
The article seemed to infer that Maggie was famous.
Who the
famous
heck is
opera
Maggie?
Singer. I've never heard of her.
This is from a paper
Did her,
in Australia.
Like, family so. Write it or something?
No, it's not. Maybe she's big around Australia. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Maggie who?
Maggie says the idea of creating an opera meets techno album has been on the cards for some time. The only problem is finding time in Tyrone's jet-setting lifestyle to make it happen.
That's the only problem.
Quote, it's easy for me to record the vocals, but there's an awful amount of work involved in the techno arrangements. We're talking days and days and weeks, she says. Maggie says hopefully when Tyrone returns from a work jaunt to the U.S. next month, they'll finally be able to get the project underway. So they haven't even done it yet. That's the best
That's
part
a
of
relief.
The story. They're talking about how great it would
it's
be.
It's already making
this.
A splash.
You know, people have done this before, and I've heard it already, and it's not good. It's just not
Well, there was Hooked on Classics back in the 80s, right?
Exactly. People have tried this, folks. It doesn't work.
There's a little
My
bit
favorite.
Of a feeling that sometimes opera can be very elitist, and I'm not like that at all. I'm still singing it operatically. I'm not compromising vocally. It's just got this fantastic, exciting beat to it. I think composer Mascagni would be delighted.
Great.
That just goes to show that there's nothing saying you can't be an opera singer and a moron.
But it's Tyrone and Maggie Noonan. If anyone wants to do the Googles. Noonan.
Wow. Techno. I'm sure he would be delighted. Mascagni.
But they haven't even done it yet. That's the best part.
Do your Italian accent. Do what Mascagni would say.
Mamma mia, that's not a word. Rude. But apparently in Wikipedia, they talk about her daughter, Katie Noonan, is an Australian singer-songwriter. She sings in George and also sings duets with her mother, Maggie Noonan. She grew up with a strong background with her mother, Maggie, a well-known opera singer. What?
At least they got
regular...
the pens, right?
It's a regular fucking Von Trapp family down there.
I think she's putting out all these articles. She's doing her own Wikipedia articles.
Exactly. Exactly.
Tyrone Noonan, his tour dates coming up.
Well, you don't want to miss that.
This is some kind of conspiracy. They could be the biggest thing to come out of Australia since Paul Hogan. Or the Energizer guy. Oi!
This could have something to do with why Australia is way the heck down at the corner of the world.
You can take the island out of the prisoners, but you can't take the prisoner out of the islands.
Or something.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know what
Moving
this is.
Moving on.
I should have made this the ridiculous item of the day. But we've got a couple other ones, too.
Yeah, you do. You have other options.
Yeah. We'll move on to the most ridiculous items of the day. Here's a good one from the Seattleist at Seattleist.com.
For a pig.
There's a singing pig. Seattle Opera got into the frenzy of pigs on parade. Now, I remember that. There was a lot of different cities had things like that where they'd have
the cows on parade.
Cows or pigs that would be all over the place and local artists or businesses would
pick. That really swept the nation.
It did.
I never could figure that out.
Me either.
They whipped up a Canadian opera pig named Rusty. Excuse me, an opera pig named Rusty. Then Michael Moore, a guy who works for Seattle Opera, composed a 27-year aria for the pig. Yeah. And persuaded baritone John Boor to lend it his voice.
Boor, do you get it?
Yeah.
Nice.
The rough translation of the is La Canzone del Maiale? Maiale?
Maiale.
Maiale.
What a day, what a song, what a great singing, this snort song of pig. Doesn't sound rusty to us, more like Pigoletto or Pigliacci.
So not a real pig, a mechanical pig.
Yeah, it's not a real pig.
Oh.
That has a recording
of some dude singing it.
Would have been more exciting if it were
actually. Who may or may not have a neck beard.
Some pig. Oh, someone wrote a comment that said, or Le Nozze di Figaro.
Of course.
Let's all think of pig names.
Everybody mail titles. In your submissions.
Yeah, and we'll add to the comments.
Il Trovahoge?
Pigifall.
Pighoiser. Tan pig. I'm out of them now, right now, I think.
Pig staff.
Fall pig. La Boreme.
Nice.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we're so clever.
Oh, no. Okay.
Feel free to interject them later in the show as you think of them.
Okay. Well, send us an email if you've got a funny pig opera name, operanow@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail, 206-424-3617. Another ridiculous item of the day. Breaking news from the opera chick, or opera chic. Again, I've reached out
Don't
to
know.
Her to find out what it means, and she hasn't told me.
She's been got a lot of legal question. Trouble.
Yeah, she got breaking news. La Scala Legal Office redesigns her logo. Her logo on her website, opera, again, chic, chick, chic.typepad.com, used to be basically the logo of La Scala, and she had the word opera chic in it. But apparently somebody at La Scala was reading it. Their chief counsel contacted her and sent her essentially like a cease and desist that she had to remove the logo, as well as remove pictures that were taken in the interior of the opera house. And apparently I've spoken to her a little bit via email. She had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of them, potentially, theoretically, that she had to go back into her archives and remove. So, and on one hand, it's kind of a pain. Plus, it's a little goofy because I don't think people are going to confuse her website. If you've ever read her website, she certainly has a very distinct tone to it that I don't think is easily going to be. A, it's in English.
Yeah.
And B, it's not going to be confused with anything from La Scala. But on the other hand, it's kind of cool that somebody's watching.
Yeah.
It kind of shows you made it. I'm waiting for the day for Opera Now magazine to send me a letter. Though I hope that the exclamation point and the profanity will help differentiate us from them. So.
Well, I think they had in mind that, you know, if they let one person do this, then they can let anybody do it. You got to put the finger in the dike.
So to speak. That's no reflection on her, of course.
No.
No, not at all.
So, that's one of the ridiculous items. Here's another one. Opera house fading is a world wonder.
Yeah.
Once again,
this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Maybe, what's her face? Maggie Noonan has been here. She can tell us more about it. Sydney's opera house appearing to be slipping out of the running in a global vote for the new seven wonders of the world. It's entering the final poll this month. Things like the Great Wall of China, the Colosseum, Machu Picchu are among the leading contenders. Now, if those are also in the top 10 are the Acropolis, the Chichen Itza Pyramid in Mexico, the Eiffel Tower, Easter Island, the Statue of Christ the Redeemer in Brazil, the Taj Mahal, and Jordan's Petra. I can't believe that the Sydney Opera House would even be considered among those.
Well, it is. It's certainly a black sheep. And that, I mean, it's a modern building, and those are all real.
I mean, it's kind of cool looking, but it doesn't stand.
There's nothing really wondrous about it, I don't think. It's just sort of a nice...
Maybe iconic, but certainly not a wonder.
There you go. The seven icons of the... No. The seven icons of Australia.
Maggie Noonan is one. Kate Noonan. The Opera House. The Pig. We're filling the list up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is a bit... I don't understand. There's no way this could hold up to the Colosseum in any way.
No, not really.
It would run a distant 55th, I think.
Well, and also this defeats the whole idea of what the wonders of the world originally meant, originally connoted, which were things that sort of defied people's expectations of what a building or a piece of art could be.
Can you name some of the original wonders of the world for us, Brian?
I can name all of them, but...
I know the Hanging Gardens of Babylon is one.
The Hanging Gardens of Babylon, yes.
What's another one?
The Statue of Zeus, the Temple of Athena at Halicarnassus, the Mausoleum at Halicarnassus. I don't know, I'm not going to bore everybody.
They had two? Wow.
No.
They must have had a lot of locals voting on
that. The Athena Temple was, okay. I think, somewhere else, but somebody can correct me on that. But anyway, these were amazing... feats of engineering, and you know, I think the Sydney Opera House is a innovative design, but I don't think anybody.
It's not a feat.
Some kind of breakthrough engineering, monument. So, I think people have gotten confused because I think the Stonehenge is in there too. I mean, you know,
it is.
I guess okay, they don't know how they got those big stones where they are, but I don't know.
It's kind of boring to look at. No,
nobody knows. Who they were.
Well, what they were doing there. But their legend lives on. Hewn into the living rock. A Stonehenge.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, Stonehenge. Where the demons dwell. Where the banshees live, and they do live well.
And where are they now, the little people of Stonehenge? And what would they say to us if we were here? All right, this show's totally gone off a cliff.
You've digressed.
Rat hole. We're falling down a rat hole. Let's go on to the final section of the show. Guess who died? We, of course, mentioned it before, but Kurt Waldheim is dead. And many would probably say good riddance to bad rubbish.
Jesu Domine. Okay.
He's gone. 88 years old, I think. Former UN president and prime minister of Austria, I believe. That's the term. Right, Brian?
Yeah, probably.
It just kind of occurred to me, so I didn't really look it up too much. But and he was a Nazi. Hard to avoid that with this picture of him in a Nazi uniform.
Not only that, he hid it. He lied about it. And
yeah. He hid his uniform?
Yeah.
They found it on the floor?
He got to be all like UN secretary and everything without anybody knowing.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh, by the way.
He served in the Balkans during the war. And again, they found a lot of evidence, photographs, medals, things like that, which he denied, but... And they found apparently his own signature on documents that were linked to massacres and deportations. So,
wow.
It's pretty hard to deny that. Rest in peace, you Nazi bastard. You'll get no quarter from me. So that was Guess Who Died? Or Thank God He Died!
Now can we go back to pig operas?
Yeah.
The Flying Pig Man.
What? Now you're just making scrap up. Now you're being ridiculous.
Yes.
You know, when pigs fly?
But that's not really
an opera. Flying pig
we're taking classic operas and renaming them. Speaking of Guess Who Died, this show died a long time ago, so I'm going to wrap things up. I want to thank my guest, Brian McGilvray.
You're welcome.
And Roberta Rice.
Oh. And our special guest.
Who didn't show up. But I didn't think he would, so. You know, I think, though, he was coming from elsewhere, so he was kind of under the gun.
From the realm beyond.
Yeah, from the realm beyond.
Oh,
Kurt Waldheim was going to make an appearance.
Mm.
Hello, okay. And thank you for having me. None of you are Jewish, are you?
Cool. How do I work this Skype program?
So anyway,
I
want to thank you guys for coming on the show. All you guys out there listening, be sure to visit our website at operanow.blogspot.com. Email us your questions, concerns, and criticisms at operanow@gmail.com. And jump into the forums while you're there. We've got the link there under the links, Opera Now Forum. Follow our topics at del.icio.us/Opera Now. That's where we kind of keep track of everything we're going to be discussing. So you can follow along at home as you're listening to the show. And leave us a voicemail, 206-424-3617. I want to thank my man Millip. He sent me a couple nice links. And I also want to thank our man out in Las Vegas. Thanks for leaving the voicemail again, even though I didn't play it. But maybe next time. But keep on listening. I do really appreciate it. And I know that you were probably busy elsewhere. That's why you didn't participate in our live show. So no fears. Well, I am Michael Rice, the host of Opera Now, and I want to thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
You know, nothing against it, but I think that the show really works better with four. Three-person dynamic isn't enough.
It's not enough to get enough debate stirring, especially since I tend to agree with Brian.
And I'm not very dynamic, so...
I thought it went okay.
Oh, no, it was fine, but I think you guys...
I bloviated.
It was much more tame than normal, and that's because we're not opposing enough.
You need a fourth person to kind of sound things off of.
Yeah.
I'll be more of an asshole next time.
That'd be nice.
We need a bad boy, leather jacket.
You could please.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Barbieri di Cipiglia?
I don't know.
That's kind of a stretch.
That's a bit of a stretch. Just think of a good one.
Don Pigsquale? Don Pork Squale?
Feel free to try and use the word swine.
Don Bacon Squale?
Ooh, swine.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wait.
Swine spiel? Swine frig?
Swine and gazong?
Swine ambula?
Terrible.
Not as terrible as this episode, though.
Eat piggy tani!
Yeah, there we go. Roberta wins.
Piggy tani.
Yay!
I'm going to come up with